bug. Any progress on the...
Well, there is little progress.
Okay.
The good news is I finally got some traces into the...
simulator?
The hard drive. Remember? Before, only one trace was going to the hard drive.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
What do you mean by that? Only one trace.
Only one.
Exactly.
When the decision was made, the time for the hard drive was the response time for the hard drive was so much larger than SSD. That only one request for the hard drive.
I see. Okay.
SSD.
So you did get that. Right?
Yeah, but the bad news is I get no requests for the SSD now.
Why is that?
Basically, at first I tried your idea of speeding up the traces.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't help at all, not one bit. And I can definitely understand why, given the model that I'm working with. Because what is happening, whatever the time that the request comes in, the way it's set up, the entire request is done before the next request is serviced. So regardless of how fast you get the request in, they'll still go, this request is completely handled and has returned until the next one is taken.
So the question is the decision condition, right? The condition that you use to make a decision. What is that condition?
The response time of the last request. For both the SSD and
of the last request.
Yeah.
And this response time is calculated how?
You take the time that the request was sent into disk sim, the arrival time, and when it returns, the request complete time minus the arrival time gives you the response time for both the SSD and the hard drive.
Okay.
And when I have it going sequentially, like I told you
but
before...
What about the queuing time outside the disk?
We talked about that last time, remember? We concluded that the arrival time automatically accounted for that, because the arrival time is the time stamp before the queuing.
Mm.
So all the time it's spent during queuing is also accounted for.
Okay, and the arrival time is based on the trace arrival time?
Yes. I even have a condition to make sure that the arrival time and the current system time are not the same before I send the trace into the queue. Before it's sent into the main queue, and the main queue distributes it to the two other level queues.
Okay.
So
how is it that it... I mean, in that case, what I see is that If in the beginning, the SSD response times are really quick, because for the first request, there's nothing in the SSD queue, and then you send it to the SSD queue from the main queue, and you get a very fast response time.
Mm-hmm.
But then, as you speed up the trace, there are multiple requests being queued up at the SSD queue. Right.
Yes, the external SSD queue. We're not talking about the internal SSD queue.
Right, the external SSD queue that's in the operating system.
Yes.
Okay, so the operating system SSD queue is a whole bunch of requests being queued up there, and the response times will start increasing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's under the assumption that the SSD queue is now not responding fast enough.
It has to happen, because the service time inside the SSD is non-zero.
Yes.
So if you speed up your trace fast enough, you can in fact create an infinite operating system SSD queue size, right? As if your inter-arrival times are zero, let's say, right, then you can fill up the operating system SSD queue and increase it to ridiculous value.
It's possible. Several times I had that problem. Initially, I had it
now,
set at 100, the queue size, and I was getting errors about the queue being filled and missing requests, too.
Oh, yeah. So you need to increase the size much more than 100.
I increased it to 500.
Okay.
So right now, it's
No, but let me finish. I haven't made my point yet.
Okay.
So if you let's say you have 1,000 requests in that SSD queue,
mm-hmm.
the response time should be 1,000 times the response time of a single
request.
Mm-hmm. So now the real question is that 1,000 times the response time of a single request at the SSD, is it greater than or equal to or less than the response time of a single request at the disk drive?
Right.
So that is the condition you should be checking to dispatch it either to the SSD or the disk, or the, yeah, to the disk drive. So when you say that the speeding up does not help, it could be because of the limitations of the queue size, of SSD queue size. Let's say you set it up to 500, maybe 500 times the latency of a single request at the SSD is not less than, or rather I should say it's not greater than the size, the latency for a single request at the disk. Do you see how by speeding up the traces you're going to build up the queue at the SSD?
That
eventually
happens.
At some point your response times are going to be greater than the response time of the disk. And then you will start sending requests to the disk.
Because the angle that I'm right now I have two versions of the program because I thought that a multi-threaded version would work better. That's the version I'm working on right now. The other version when I tried the speed up idea, what was happening is that during speed up, even with the speed up, only one request was being handled at the time. Let's say that I can definitely see what you mean now. What I should have done, and nah, that would not have worked either. Because I have one while loop making one pass. Once the decision is set, I then call the SSD to check if it has requests. I have a function for the SSD, so I call it to see if its queue has requests.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is that function doesn't loop to empty the queue.
Yeah,
do you see what I mean? And then I also have to handle the hard drive.
Okay.
Right after it. So the SSD is called, the hard drive is called. If there is absolutely nothing in the queue, it quickly returns. The hard drive then handles its queue. If there's nothing inside the queue, it then returns.
What is the purpose of this while loop? Mm-hmm. What is the high-level goal when you design this while loop?
The high-level purpose of the main while loop is to run the system. That's
okay.
Where the traces originate.
Okay.
That's where the traces comes from.
Okay.
So you have the file.
Now this while loop then should only loop through all the requests in your trace, right? Should loop through going through each request in the trace.
What do you mean by that? Each request in the trace.
In your trace file.
Yes.
In your
that
trace
is
file, you have
what
like
it's doing.
Whole bunch of requests, and you in this while loop is walking through each of those requests,
mm-hmm.
issuing them to the disk or SSD
based on
the condition, and based on the arrival time and the current simulation time,
mm-hmm.
right? So you cannot dispatch the request before the simulation time actually reaches the arrival time, correct? So that's what this while loop is doing. It's picking up the next request, looking at its arrival time.
Mm-hmm.
If that arrival time is equal to or greater than the current simulation time, then you dispatch the request.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's fine. So what else? What are you saying? Call the disk and call the SSD. What does that mean?
Well, after you set the send the request into the main queue.
Mm-hmm.
Then
if the arrival time is greater than the
okay. Once that is done, the queue now has a request. So the next step is the decision where will that request go. So based on the return time of the previous request, and if this is the initial condition, since both of the return times are equal, which is zero, it automatically goes to the SSD.
Okay.
So let's say that this is the first request.
Mm.
It comes into the main queue. The,
mm.
the main queue makes a decision. It goes to the SSD.
Okay.
And at the SSD, the SSD function is called, and it handles that request and returns. Then of course we have to check if the HD queue has anything. Anything. Since it has nothing, it simply returns, and the loop rolls back to the top. And again, pull off the next request from the file.
Okay, so it seems like you're handling one request
at a time.
That's the problem.
That's the problem. I started the multi-threaded version of it, because regardless of what you do, unless of course I unload all of the requests into a single queue. At the time, that seemed a little unreasonable, since that trace file is huge. I haven't even seen the end of it yet.
Mm-hmm.
It's a, I'm serious. It's a huge trace file, and I usually take only about 2,000. Well, two. I guess that's two. Yeah, 2 seconds of it, and it's usually 200, 300, or. And when the whole system is working,
depending on the speed up, though, if you speed it up, then it's going to be.
It's going to take more. Yeah,
what is you were saying about that you have to wait for the simulation time to be what greater than the
current internal disk time.
Right. So okay. So you have the request timestamp
mm-hmm.
or write-off time, and you have to wait. When do you send that? I mean, what conditions in terms of time?
Well, so far I've been making the request arrival time, the one that I get from the file,
mm-hmm.
equal the occurrences time when I send the request, or it has to be greater than that. If it's greater, I just bump that time, the occurrences time to that time.
Right. Yeah, because I am thinking, you know, that you have on this thing, you have your callback, the
yeah.
which tells you when will be the next event, right?
Exactly.
So, okay. Okay, so you have the timestamp of the last event as well, let's say, right?
Timestamp of the last
event. Yeah, because event. You have the callback of the previous event
mm-hmm.
and the one you're receiving now. So let's say, because I'm trying to think, because it seems reasonable that you have that you need to have multiple outstand requests in this thing at the same time, right?
Yeah, I definitely need that.
But it seems like the way you're handling the request is not
allowing. Only allow one. That is the main
right,
problem.
So, well, can I remove this?
Yeah,
okay.
It is whatever you need to do it.
Okay, so what I'm saying is that you have, let's say that you have your callback at time T. Your previous callback,
mm-hmm.
right? And now you have a callback times C prime. So what I was thinking is that the right way to dispatch this request is that when you have the callback of C prime, right, you need to send all the requests that are between these two times. Is that what you're saying?
You're going to have to explain that a little more.
Okay, so the idea is that you have a timestamp of the request, right? Let's say request time,
mm-hmm.
right? So you have your previous callback time, which is the previous event, and you have the C prime, which is your next event,
mm-hmm.
right? Which means that you are at some point in the middle.
Yes.
I mean,
but you don't know what is the next event time. Until it happens.
Until
you know it because the callback is the time for the next event.
Okay, the callback will tell you the time
yeah.
for the next.
Yeah, when a request arrives, the model is this. Let's say this is a request.
Mm-hmm.
So when the request arrives, you have it arrived at the request start time,
mm-hmm.
and after some processing. which is what happens immediately after, disk sim calls back the callback function. And the callback function gives you disk time, which is the time
of completion.
Of the, exactly.
Completion time. No, I'm talking about these things.
I'm not talking about the completion time. It's not the completion time, but the time of the next internal event that will lead to the completion time.
Okay.
Wait. I understand in a different way.
Really?
It's the next event, but it doesn't mean that it's the completion time.
It's the next event that will lead to it. After this event, the request will be completed here.
No, but you will have multiple keys here. You could have multiple keys here.
Before you have completion.
Before you have completion.
Well, the way I handle it, whenever T happens, I automatically check if T is greater than the current time. If it is, I jump to T. So T is the next one that he executed. So I call
the MCU another event with T. What T
is prime.
Okay.
So basically, this is the request. I send the
request. I'm saying this T is the time of the previous event. I'm saying this is the request
the
time.
Time of the previous. Okay.
Because the thing is that this event-driven program, right? So the thing is that each time it does an event, it will call your callback, saying, this will be the time of my next event. Mm-hmm. So I understand that callback is saying, okay, do you have something to send
before this
happens? Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm saying that if you have something between this, some request between this time and this time, would be multiple requests, right? From this time, you need to send all of them right away before this happens, right?
I handled it inside the loop. Basically, once this happens, the initial call is happening, the schedule, what you're talking about is the scheduling function. Disk sim use it to tell you the time of its next internal event, just like you said.
Right.
Basically, I check the time of the next request if there is one inside. The problem is, since this is a single loop, there is none inside.
When you say inside, what do you mean?
Inside the SSD queue.
Inside the disk sim itself.
Not what inside disk sim, because it wouldn't be inside disk sim. It will be inside the SSD.
The other complication I see that we need to handle is because this T prime can actually come from two different places. It can come from the SSD simulator, and it can also come from the hard disk simulator.
Yeah.
Right? And these can, in fact, happen out of order. So, for instance, SSD simulator can say my next event, actually, the more common occurrence would probably be the disk drive simulator would say my next event is supposed to happen at 20, and then the SSD simulator will say, well, my next event is happening at 1, because we sent out both at 0, and this guy does things in 1 millisecond, this guy does things in 20 milliseconds. Now, if you get the 20, you should not send all the requests out between 0 and 20. You have to wait until this SSD sim is also going to queue the next event. So you had to wait for two callbacks, one from the SSD and one from the disk, to figure out what to do next.
Yes.
At any given time, you should have two callbacks.
It is two callbacks, because I separated these two interfaces, remember? Because it wasn't working separately. These two are completely separate. And since disk sim code is reentrant, this is independent of that.
Sure. So, no, but what I'm saying is that when you get one callback, you cannot immediately make a decision, because the other callback might report an event which is at a lower time, like in this case. So let's say you have one request in the disk and one request in the SSD.
Okay.
The disk thing will make a callback, and it registers the next event to be 20.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, it gives you time T of the next event to be 20.
At that point, if you look at this time 20 and say that I'm going to dispatch all the requests from between my current time and 20, that could be incorrect.
That will be incorrect.
That will be incorrect.
Yes.
That well, not necessarily. That will be incorrect in case the SSD comes in and says, well, I have an event at 1. But if the SSD, let's say you didn't have any of that and you only had the disk sim simulator, then dispatching all the requests between 0 and 20 is fine.
That was the model I was operating under when I was getting the PS check. That regardless of when the next event time is, I can simply insert the next request
under
that are
this
in between
time.
This until that time.
Yes.
And it was giving me the PS check because each request you send in generates another event. And these events might be spaced out far enough that these events are a space, and the space in between the events, nothing is happening there. But you wouldn't be aware of that since you only have the timestamp for this event. So what I did is that I ran the events under the assumption that disk. So I read under the assumption that disk sim has a descheduling function. And what the descheduling function will do is, if there is no event at a time that you send, you send this, let's say this is empty, there's no event, and yet you call the internal event, it would return, advance the time, but do nothing. Apparently, it wasn't
so
true.
That's
or
the part I don't get. That's the part I don't get, because let's for a moment forget about the SSD thing. Let's just forget this.
All right.
So I queued one request with DISSIM, and then the DISSIM invoked a callback handler that I implemented, right, to say that my next event is at 20. Please dispatch all the requests that you need to, otherwise I'm going to jump my time to 20, right, and do this next event. So at that point, your code needs to dispatch all the events that
are in between.
There
to 20.
From there to 20. There is no choice but to do that.
But every time you send a request, it sends you another time saying this is the next event time.
That's no
So in a way, you're supposed to have an external queue.
An external
which
queue.
Which is why I'm starting of implementing. You're supposed to have an external
queue
of
all
the internal callback functions as you're doing this.
Yeah.
I did not have that before.
So why do you need that queue just in the same page?
Because each request you send in,
yeah, just generate a callback.
Immediately a callback.
Yeah, I understand that. So, but why do you need to keep that?
You need to keep it because this is the next internal development of the system. Let's say, like Raju was saying, that we started here, we send a request, and the request tells us that its next internal event is at 20. And we have several requests to send in before that. Each time we send a request, it's going to send us another internal event time that is further away from 20. But 20 still have to be handled.
Yeah, right. So you dispatch all the requests until 20. What do you do next in terms of dispatching further requests?
Once
you're going to look at the next event in that dispatch, in that callback handling queue, and say, okay, the next event that was reported by this sim was at 40. So, and these are the queue of events that I'm looking at, right, which are being continuously
added
on. Each time you make
so I look at the next one, I dispatch the next set of requests.
But actually, is that queue really required? Because the thing is that
You need to remove and dequeue also.
But
that is one of the reasons
why
you might have had problems with the
FP check.
Because you need to get rid of these guys.
Yeah, but
there
is this function that makes this seem to advance till 20, let's say. Right? So when you call that, this thing will call you back, telling you the next event.
Yes.
Right. So you're saying that you don't have these callbacks happening in between?
You have those callbacks. But you don't need to keep them.
Oh, you don't need to keep them.
No.
Why?
Because you just call this thing saying, okay, now advance till this time.
20. Yeah.
Till 20, and then it will call you back
again
saying, this is my next event.
Okay.
Yeah. I see. That's interesting. I missed that part.
So I guess what Lewis is trying to say is that you look at the first callback, you say 20, you queue all those events, ignore the callback functions generated because of those events.
Okay.
And then once you dispatch the intervening events, you advance the distant time to 20. Lewis is suggesting that when you advance the time to 20, then distant will report those events automatically.
Will it?
Will report those events again.
Yeah, what I'm saying is that after you call and say, okay, advance it this time, after this thing finishes to do all the events till that time, it will call you back again saying, okay, this is my next event, which of course will be greater than 20.
Oh.
But what about all these events that were generated? It's going to regenerate them?
That's a good question. I don't know. I don't know about that.
Once 20 is reached,
okay.
From my understanding, once the internal event for 20 is reached,
okay.
the next callback function to be called is the completion event.
Yes. Okay.
So this would be completed, and then disk sim would expect to move to this next internal event.
So what do you mean by completion event?
When you do get a completion event?
Yes. There is a completion event where disk sim return telling you this request is done.
And my time is
and
now
this
here.
This is my time for the request.
And I've already advanced.
That's how I get the time elapsed. Because disk sim tell me the time that it returns. And it gives me the request. So all I do is go inside the request structure, get its start time, and since I already have its completion time, just minus the completion to the start, and I get the response time for that particular request.
Okay, so far we are okay, actually, because I just completed the first request at 20, and I've already dispatched all the intervening requests that needed to be dispatched. So far, so good.
So
the question is, will this sim
regenerate
at that point, will generate these,
So what you're saying is that when this sim tells you my next event at 20, that event is,
not a complete
completion?
No, this is not a completion.
This is just an event.
This is just an event.
Okay.
And like you said, they didn't elaborate on the purpose, but they said that this sim will send you back a schedule time, and you're supposed to call the internal event with that scheduled time. Do you see what I mean? So, yeah, you can use it as this is a time given by a disk sim to tell me if I have any intervening requests to send all of them in.
Yeah.
So you can see it as an intermittent event for external requests that would come at that time.
Yeah, before that time.
Before that time.
So this, in a way, this sim is notifying the external system to send out requests, because if you don't, then I'm going to move ahead to that time next time. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, it won't do it, but you have to do it for it.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have to say now you can.
Yeah. Now you can go. I'm done doing all of my processing.
Oh.
So far,
doesn't this generate those events that happen after 20? After it reaches the point 20? And you're saying that it generates the events before it reaches the point?
It generates, because after this, it generates the completion event for that. And then at 40, it generates the completion event for 40.
Mm.
60, it generates the completion event for 60.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. Remember, initially what I was doing when I was getting the DHT check is that if it generates an internal event, I completely ignored it and simply walked through a timeline.
Mm.
Of course, that timeline was too a brain too small, so I was getting a number of events.
Mm-hmm.
I was getting it in the thousands of events for like 50 requests, so I could only run for 2,000.
Yeah.
For 300.
Yeah.
Because I was sending in too many requests.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I was doing that initially is that when I read the manual, it was that there's this descheduling event, that event function that this sim used. If there is no event at this time, it would simply ignore the call completely, the call to internal event completely. I was working thinking that this is what this sim will do, but apparently it didn't do that.
Okay, so now can we have this queue, external queue, and is that what you're doing now?
Right now I'm doing two things. I am thinking of implementing this external queue, and I was fully testing the speed up thing that you told me about. Since it wasn't working at all in a single threaded version of the application, I created a completely separate multi-threaded application, which is working really well, except for the fact that for some weird reason,
Why are there two threads? I mean, one thread for the SSD and one thread for the hard disk.
For the hard disk. Yeah,
because
I have two interfaces. Exactly. Disk sim is re-entrant.
Mm-hmm.
So, this thread is completely running and is only accessing the SSD queue. And this thread is running and accessing the HD queue.
Okay.
But
I don't think that's going to work because they need to communicate. The way they need to communicate is that here you have another queue, right? Just like you have here, you have another queue of internal events that are being generated by the SSD simulator.
Yeah, and here you have one as well.
Now your main loop. Okay, so this is your main loop that's walking through all the I/O requests in your trace file.
Yeah.
It needs to look at this guy and this guy.
Yeah.
Take the minimum of the two. If there is none in here,
then it takes that one.
And then it takes that one, right, exactly. And then this main loop has to be the one thread, right? Because you need to walk through
the main thread
with the request sequentially. And then all you need to do is look at this, look at this, look at the minimum value, dispatch all the intervening requests, and can go on to the next request. Advance time to this point, so that the SSD can do whatever it needs to. Advance time for this guy also to that point where you dispatch all the intervening requests. Once you have that, then you look at the next request here and the first request here again to find out the minimum one.
Yeah.
Take the minimum again, dispatch a whole bunch of the next set of intervening requests out, advance times in both places.
Mm-hmm.
You need to advance them synchronously because it's a single system that you are trying to simulate. If you have two threads, they're going to advance time independently. And that's my concern. You cannot have that.
I did not think that would matter because initially what I was trying to do is achieve your speed up. And remember, I told you I was not going to try dividing the time, but I was going to send them at the current clock time of each of those. Do you see what I mean? It seems to work wondrously for the hard drive, but the SSD for some.
But how do you ensure that the requests are being dispatched in a time synchronized fashion across the simulation time synchronized fashion across the two threads? Are the two threads communicating at all, or not?
No, they're not. They're not at all.
If they're not,
I didn't worry about the time at that time. Because I was thinking.
I mean, and the other thing I have is that why do you need two threads? It seems like you just need one thread to run this main loop and send requests and examine these two external queues of events.
And another thing that's novel to me, you said that we have to send all of the requests at this time. Intervening requests at this time. When we have a single primary loop, the next time that the system checks it usually has only one request inside its queue. Because it's
which,
loading
which queue are you talking about? The primary queue?
Yeah, it's loading the request one at a time from the file.
Yeah.
It's queue itself.
You can envision the external file itself as this common queue. You can think of the external file as the common queue. So you're reading from that queue and inserting into these queues. So you don't need to insert into a queue here and then into queue here. You can just read off of the file. That's good enough.
Okay, so as long, so I check the time here and I check the time here. Let's say the time's already synchronized.
Mm-hmm.
And I know when the next event will happen.
And at that point, you also have the least...
At that point, I also have my current position in the file and the time of that position.
Right.
So what I would do is start reading off requests until I reach a time that is greater than the time of these two next events.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if there's the right way to do this.
Yeah.
Why do you have two threads?
I have two threads because initially it seems like a wonderful idea.
Right.
Because I'm reading from the file
right.
from the side.
But how do you know that the two threads are not reading the same entry from the file and both are discussing?
No. The two threads don't
read from the file.
Read from the file at all.
Okay.
They don't commit. All they do is run the simulator with the key. Basically, I have a queue and an IMFA, and I put it on completely on that thread along with its internal functions.
Mm-hmm.
That's all they access. So this is accessing the simulator, the queue. Remember, I don't have the queue of internal events.
Right.
That's not implemented yet.
Right. Yes.
I am Anthony. I'm the student assistant for the provost. I'm sorry to interrupt.
All right. Good.
Here's your tenure promotion letter, okay?
Oh,
I love it.
Thank you. Okay, so, yeah.
So, I have this queue here of disk request structures. This queue here of disk request structures.
Mm-hmm.
And the third queue is the primary queue. The reason I have it is because I have to get the request of the file.
Mm-hmm.
And, I guess you could say it's easier to access them that way. It's kind of like a simpler solution to me.
Mm-hmm.
So this queue's main job is to fill in this thread's main job is to fill in the primary queue.
Okay, so you have three threads for the three queues.
Exactly.
Okay, and the main thread synchronized with the other two.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So the main thread fills in on its queue at the same time. After each time it gets a request, it checks with these two return times to get which one should get the request.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's say it is the first request, so that the SSD gets both times is zero. So the queue, it locks, send the request up to the SSD, and then moves on to filling in this again with the next request. Now, this is processing. And once the next one comes, since this is zero and this is non-zero, the next request automatically goes to that one. And it starts processing itself. So, and it goes on like this. It continues filling its queue while distributing the different requests based on their return time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, since the time that it takes for Disco to run, and this go to run is usually a lot longer than going through the loop. What would happen is that this queue over here would fill up really fast, and I would have to stop put the thread to sleep for a while until these two are at a certain level where they recall that one and they start sending requests again.
So somehow I feel that having the three threads is not can be avoided. But I don't know exactly how to do that yet. I mean, I'll have to think about this a
little more. I can also do it in two.
But two threads?
Yeah, I don't necessarily need each of those systems to be on a single thread.
Mm-hmm.
They can be on the same thread. In that case, their time wouldn't necessarily be synchronized, but it would work the same.
Well, what needs to happen, I guess, is that if you have a single thread, let's say, and then you walk through... It's your whole loop is going to be always there is a next request from the file, right? So that's your candidate that you need to deal with. That's what this main loop is for, what to do with this next request.
Yeah.
So I have a request arrival time for that next request.
Mm-hmm.
In this loop, you can check, okay, what is the minimum event time for this guy and the minimum event time for this guy. Take the minimum of those two values. If the minimum of those two values is actually greater than the request arrival time for the next request, you dispatch that request to the device which has a lower current latency. You need to figure out the lower current latency based on a separate calculation where you get completion events. But when you, each time you look at the event, you also look, well, is this a completion event or not? If it is, then what is the response time and update the statistics for each device? I'm just assuming that you're already doing that,
right?
So once you dispatch, then, well, internally you queue all these events, that internal events for SSD and disk drive, whichever the case may be, and then you're done with that request. As far as this main loop is concerned, you go to the next. Well, you go to the next request, you look at the time. Well, actually, before you go to the next request, you're not done yet, because you need to advance time for both the simulators externally to say, well, I'm done with all the requests until you are, well, no, hold on, no, that's a mistake. So once you dispatch the request, you look at the next request, find its time. Is that time still smaller than the minimum of these two values? If yes, you should dispatch the next request also and go on dispatching requests until you reach the minimum of these two values.
The only objection I have to that, that the district request queue that's being filled depends on the last request sent.
Yes.
So let's say that this is the first one, so there is no request.
Mm-hmm.
And since there is no request, I simply can send it to the SSD.
That's fine.
While the SSD is processing it, I wait for the SSD to finish processing it. That's when the next event time comes.
Well,
I have to recheck again to see when the next event time is here, and when, of course, I will only, only this key will be valid.
One thing which I would say is that when you dispatch the request, it's a synchronous call.
Yeah.
That same control flow will create all these requests. So you don't really need to check anything at a later point. You can check right away. As soon as you dispatch, you can check this queue at that point, because all the events that this sim needed to do would have been done already.
Through that thread.
Through the same thread.
I was talking about the single thread model.
No, with the single thread model. I'm talking about the single thread model. So let's walk through this a little bit more.
Yeah, because my only problem with the single thread model is that once I finish a look at this time and send the request,
okay,
the next request time will depend on the last request that I sent.
Right.
So I'd have to check again, and I would have to continually check until I notice that the time of the queue finally comes to a time that is less in the next request time.
Well, you need to advance those events, remove those events. If the next request time is not equal to this one, which is the minimum, you advance it to the next one. Well, is it greater than or equal to your next arrival time or this guy? No, you have to then move on to this, whichever it is. You always keep track of what is the next event time. You have to walk through this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because your next arrival time has not reached this point yet, or is beyond this point, and beyond this point, and beyond this point, and beyond this point of all internal events, then you need to dequeue all these guys.
Yeah.
And when you dequeue these events, if there is a completion event, you go and record your statistics. Right? So here is what this big while loop in for a single threaded version will look like.
Yeah.
So this is my view. So first is you read next request from Facebook.
Yes.
Okay. Now, get minimum of HDD and SSD internal
So this single thread event.
Yeah, this is the single thread model.
Okay.
Do you get what the second line is doing?
Yes.
You find out which one is the minimum time.
Let's say this is the initial run and both of them are zero.
But if both these are empty, then zero. Then the initial would be the minimum time is
probably the max number.
What?
The max number.
Yeah. Okay. So some max value, some default max. Because you want to advance the time so you can dispatch the next request. Nothing at the SSD and disk. You cannot wait for the SSD and the disk to advance your time. You have to advance your time based on the requests that are coming in.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why you said to some max value. And so this is, let me call this min. Okay. This is a number.
Mm-hmm.
It's a time. Okay. Now, then you make a check. So this is my request. So if request time is less than, I should say, while request time is less than min.
But request, do you mean by request time is the timestamp? Or arrival time.
Yeah, arrival time of the request.
Okay, yeah, arrival time of the request. And then you're going to do a few things. Dispatch. Request. Okay. Advance. Sim time.
Yes.
Sim time to RT. The next request.
So
okay, not next request.
That's what synchronizes the time.
That synchronizes your dispatching with the simulators.
Mm-hmm.
Time. Okay.
But wait. So you have, in this case, you have multiple instances of this thing.
You have multiple instances of this thing, and you're getting the min of both of those.
Mm. Yeah.
But
in terms of use.
Well,
I
don't understand why you have multiple instances of this. Or wouldn't you like?
Why is there multiple instances? Because you need SSD and HDD.
Yeah, because it would not allow SSD and HDD to be on the same power file.
Oh, that was a problem. But even though you can, do a single disk SIM for them,
mm-hmm.
then it was a matter.
Yeah, if you put two HDs together, it works fine. You put two SSDs together,
okay.
It works
okay.
fine. There are different handling functions.
Okay. Okay, that makes sense. Good.
Yeah, so default here is some max value.
Okay.
Queues are empty. They meant queues are
empty. Okay. Since this is a while loop, when it goes up to run the second time, do we also update to the next request?
Yeah. Read next RT from save file. Okay.
And we compare it to that same min, of course.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Do.
But so.
Exactly. So you also. The min is the same.
Yeah.
Min
is the exact same min.
Yeah. Okay. So you just RT change.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you move on. Okay. So now, when you break out of this while loop, what that means is that the next request time is greater than the min.
Yes.
Or equal.
Okay. Greater or equal to the min. So what you need to do is, just to make this simple, let me say greater than, less than or equal to. So the next request time is certainly greater than the min value.
Okay. Once you break out of the loop now, you automatically are at the min time. So
the
you run the internal event.
Yes, you're already, you're not at the min time yet. You're at the last RT.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
So
the first you do is advance.
Right.
To min. Okay.
Yeah, but we might as well consider that we are at min because you just jumped to it.
We did not because the last RT could be substantially before min.
Yeah.
And our advance only happens
to RT inside this loop. So once I get out of the loop, I have to
advance
to min. Okay. So once I advance to min, I process event. Process min event.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, register completion times, whatever, do statistics, things of that kind.
Yeah.
Right. Now, remove, or rather I should say delete, DQ. DQ. Min event. Okay, so now we have a new min.
Yes.
Correct?
So how do you queue all? Because you have queue for both.
Yeah.
Okay, for both simulators. Okay.
So now you have a new min. And over here, actually, I already read. I don't want to read twice.
You so can erase that side.
And I'm going to put it outside.
That's it. So once we DQ the next min event, by DQing the next min event, do you mean the minimum time this between
so you
this and
basically
that?
Let's say this was the min event, you just remove it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Remove that guy. So the next min becomes the candidate min, you which you had to compare against this. To find out
which one is the min. Yeah.
So I think I would suggest you, because I'm still not certain that you need to keep that queue.
Which queue?
The event time queue, yeah.
Okay.
I think, I don't know why, but I think this thing will regenerate the callback. Right? So, well, you don't need the queue. Brother, you want to check that?
Yeah, well, I'll definitely implement this queue into my single instance version, single loop version to tell you the results.
Okay.
It seems like it should work.
Seems like too simple.
Yeah, that doesn't seem that way to you too.
What? This is too simple?
This is
not
good,
good,
right?
Are you, are you concerned? Or, yeah, sometimes it's not good because it means that you
we're missing
efficient.
Some variables.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The queue of the events will occur in the callback, right? And you need to check that if one thing is happening, because otherwise you could have errors because you will queue multiple.
Yeah, multiple instances of the same
event. The same event.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that would happen if this can keep regenerating the event time. But I don't think it does.
When you advance the time, you have to advance the time to a time less than the next event. Is that right? Yeah.
No, advance
no.
To the
greater.
To the time equal to or greater than the next event. I would advance it to the equal to.
Yeah.
Because
that's
that
what
would
I was
trigger the event from actually
see,
happening.
No,
so far,
they
had told me that this SIM, remember mm-hmm. we had discussed this before, that the interface on this SIM can only handle one call at a time.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they said. What I was doing is this. I send in a request.
Mm-hmm.
So
we have the first request coming in, and that request would generate a internal event time.
Mm-hmm.
Since they tell me it's only one request at a time, mm-hmm. I simply take that time
mm-hmm.
and run the next internal event, jump the current simulation time, external time, to that time, and run that time.
Mm-hmm.
So when I run it, the time, the internal event was processed for that request, and an end of event completion happened for this.
Mm-hmm.
And then after the fact that this happened, I get the next request from the disk and was booming.
Yeah, but that wasn't true. That that you can in fact send multiple requests to the disk.
Yeah,
right?
To a limited extent, you can't go crazy about it. But if you are queuing all of the internal times,
yeah,
then you can conservatively jump to them and not generate all of those PF counts. Because the one way to do that check is the PF count.
Yeah, well, what then needs to happen is that if you cannot submit more requests, okay, there is a minor change that you need to make to get that to still work, the same thing. So what you would do, if, add a check here, if cannot dispatch R, okay, add to OSQ.
Okay, you add it back to the OSQ.
I add it back to the OSQ. Okay, and at some point I have to dispatch this stuff from the OSQ into the disk. And that can only happen when some events get triggered. Okay, so each time there is a DQ event, okay, and each time there is a DQ event, then flush OSQ as much as possible, as you can, dispatching requests in the OSQ. Each time there is a completion event or whatever it is that you can in fact send more requests to the disk, you pull out from the OSQ and send it out.
You know what? I just realized what was bothering me there for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
When is the decision where does the next request go is made?
Here. Right here. So here, when I say dispatch R, you need to check the condition. Okay, should I dispatch to disk or should I dispatch to SSD? Now that's based on
that
the response time.
Based on the response time.
That would be in this, based on the statistics that you have been gathering from the process minimum.
Correct.
But initially, I think that there should be an exception for the initial condition there, because initially both of these response times would be equal.
Yeah.
And we'd probably end up, do we do so round robin, since this would be the initial condition, or do we send most of it to the SSD? Because initially the response time would be the same,
mm-hmm.
therefore there wouldn't be.
Yeah, then you do round robin. Then you do round robin. So this would sort of deal with that, except that what you need to do is you need to maintain this additional queue of requests at each, you know, external queue at the SSD and external queue at the disk, which would make sense.
Yeah, we already have those.
So can you check if you can send more requests? I mean, is that possible? Checking that condition.
Oh, the
can
you
dispatch or not?
The value of the PF is a constant. So far, it's 6,000. So I can check how close that is to 6,000.
The PF check is a different issue than the number of outstanding requests in the SSD.
I think each request sends an event, and PF check counts to event.
Okay. So anyway, so I think this is sort of a skeleton of, I mean, this needs to be refined. I'm sure there are bugs in this.
Yeah.
So you need to, you know, sit with it and refine it. And then you
but I definitely like the initial idea, and I I'm more than happy that, that they're bending the multiple thread
to be model. Intuitively, when I look at the, you know, the simulation model and the wave set of the simulators, my instinct tells me that you don't need more than one thread to do the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
You can do everything with one thread because all of this is event-driven. And when you have event-driven systems, you're typically good. You can do everything that you need with a single thread.
And a single thread.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's the whole point. You react to events to jump to a different part of the code instead of having a thread.
Thread that's waiting for some time and things like that. Yeah. Okay, so let's work on this for this week, and then we can meet again next week.
Yeah,
about that.
Take a picture of that.
Yeah. Take a picture of that.
Just in case I forget, I'm pretty sure I won't, but
yeah.
I can't.
And here I need to say that you need to look at OSQ. Maybe this is not the for our Try to dispatch a new request. If there are requests in the OSQ, add it to the OSQ directly. Dispatching happens from the OSQ at this point when you dequeue event.
At the dequeuing event.
Yeah, dispatch from OSQ. Okay.
So this entire loop over here populates the OSQ. Then.
This loop will end up populating the OSQ.
The OSQ and
in case that you cannot send directly to the SSD.
In case the request is, the amount of requests
the amount of requests check
that you need to send in a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's not about the FP check. I think it's about the queue length, right?
I think that the FP check is simply the queue length size, but I'm not sure.
Hmm.
I didn't check, but it might be.
I think the FP check is just a constant of the maximum number of events you can have in the disk controller. I think it's different because it's not only about the request; it's about all the events that you have inside the disk controller.
Yeah, of course, because you have a.
The thing is that for each request you send, you generate more than one event, right?
Mm.
So that means that the FP check one or the FP number won't be increased by one, but it would be increased by multiple events. So
it could be
different, yeah. So are we done?
Yeah, I think so. Okay, so we'll meet again next week, same time.
Mind taking a picture and send it to my camera.
I don't have time to take the phone with camera.
Yeah.